All right. Hey, good evening, everyone, and welcome. This is The Buzz, Studio W, The Buzz, circling the globe. Coming up right after this hit by Mr. Jermaine Holmes, we'll have the Soul 70 Show, Q-Lin and EB. And the moon shines down at night. I tell you, baby, don't worry about nothing. I'ma be right by your side. Let me have a little talk with your mind. And let my energy speak through your soul. More precious than all types of riches. Got my heart to bend down to your soul. Just like the raindrops fall from the sky. And the flowers that bloom in the spring. I knew when I first laid eyes on you. You were gonna be my queen. Let's take a ride through spiritual unity. And we can swing by love. Jermaine Holmes, Never Knew Love. Hey, everybody, welcome. This is the Soul 70 Show. Every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 6 o'clock Central and 7 on the East. And we want to welcome our host to the station right now, Q-Lin Green and EB. Hey, guys, how are you?
I'm fine. Well, how you doing?
Good.
Doing pretty good. What are you guys up to today?
Oh, man. A whole bunch, but we're going to start this off right. We got a special guest on the night, singer-songwriter. He just released a new album December 5th called Bigger Than My Fears. That song you just heard was off of his new album. Y'all could look it up on all digital platforms. It's called Bigger Than My Fears. And he's also a band member and a background vocalist for D'Angelo and the Vanguard. So y'all give it up right now for Mr. Jermaine Holmes. Hey, man, what's going on?
Okay.
Got that in the budget. What's going on, man? What's going on?
Everything.
How you doing?
Good.
Thank you so much for coming on.
I'm
appreciate
good.
It.
Not a problem, man.
Woo, let's get started. I want to start from the beginning. I call this I like getting to the guest musical genesis. So where does music start for you? When did you start your musical journey, in your childhood, what was your musical genesis? Like, who was, like, the first artist you remember listening to when you were younger?
My family. I was born into a musical family. Both sides of my family. My mom's side of the family, they're a Hall of Fame, gospel quartet family, the Lumsey sisters. So that's my mom's side. Then on my dad's side, it's the Mighty Blazing Stars out of Statesville, North Carolina. There, my dad was the lead singer. And so I was pretty much born into music. Like, everyone in the family plays an instrument or sings or drums or something. You know, it's just how I was raised up, both sides. So that was kind of like where I started from, you know, and then that kind of evolved and to what I am now, you know.
Right. And so was it like a thing in the household? Because I know in some like church households, like you couldn't listen to quotation marks secular music or whatever that means or whatever. I listened to everything. I was listening to No Limit Records and would go to church on Sunday. So that's how my household was. But were you like restricted from any R&B music when you were a kid?
Well, for me, that would be a no, because I had two first cousins of mine that were playing for a lot of artists. Don Jubal Smith, who plays with Frankie Beverly.
Man, that's a bad boy right there. He played in your, that's your first cousin?
That's my first cousin, him and Eric Fitzgerald.
Get out.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorite guitarists ever.
Our mothers are sisters.
Get out. Wow.
So they were the first in the family to do like mainstream stuff. You know, all the television shows.
Yeah, I think you played for Aaliyah and all that during the
90s. Yeah, it was Aaliyah and
yeah.
They played for TLC and
right.
Just so many, all the artists that came before us, you know, they were playing. I believe my cousin Eric started out with Sheila E. in the 80s, and my cousin Jubal, he would start out with Tony.
That's what it is. Yeah. Right.
I
can't believe you're related to him. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's a small world, you know.
Right.
We're all first cousins. And then, just like them, everybody else in the family, they played, they sang, you know, did other stuff. So, you know, it was just natural. It was just so natural. And they always brought me around whenever they were doing shows with any of those artists. I was always there. When Fantasia first came out, when Rihanna first came out, when Layla Hathaway hit the scene with her band, and like, I was there, you know, so.
Wow.
Sitting on the side looking when Maya and Avant and Faith, you know, like just all these artists, it was just an honor to be there growing up, you know, just seeing what really happens on the stage, from the backgrounds to the music to everything. So that's kind of what started me out, you know?
Right. And was it like a age in particular to where you were like, was it watching like those artists like that made you want to say, oh, I want to do this for a living? What was the age in particular where you wanted to like do it professionally?
Well, it started young for me. My mom, I remember getting in trouble in school. I'll just say like kindergarten. And I got in trouble. My teacher called my mom on me. And I was like super bad in school. So this particular day, I'm doing my normal being bad and my teacher starts smiling at me. And she points to the door. And there's my mom there. So my mom came in the classroom, beat me in front of the whole class, and then made me sing. Then made me sing after she whooped me, right? So
that's nuts.
After I sung, all the girls was like, ooh, I didn't know you can sing. At that very moment, that's when I knew I want to sing for a living. This is what I want to do.
So it was the young cussies that was...
Absolutely.
The young fast girls, as your grandma would call it, is being fast. That was loving your singing. That's what started it. You know, that's great because Babyface said it's a lot of different singers that said that, you know, Joe, I heard Joe say that, and a whole other line of singers that said that was their start. I think Eric Benet too, I think, but yeah. Yeah, yeah. You're following the lineage of a bunch of R&B men. With that story, so I want to know. I want to know, in terms of your, because I was going to get to D'Angelo and Vanguard, like, a little bit later, whatever, but,
okay.
In terms of, like, growing up in the church and gospel music, was it, because your background vocals I see, like, it really stands out, and it's, those harmonies. D'Angelo grew up in the church, and obviously you grew up in the church with those harmonies. Was that easier for you to, I guess, know your capabilities as a singer doing that? Because I know singing, I do a little bit of background vocals too, so it's like, I get, like, how certain pitches, like, perfect pitch and understanding what notes is supposed to be there. What sort of schooling did you get with growing up in the church and learning how to sing and all that stuff, learning harmonies and all that?
Well, again, like I said before, it started my family. I remember there's so many elements, different people in my family, like my grandmother. When my mom and her group, the Lumsey Sisters, used to go on tour, before I was old enough to go on tour with them, my grandmother would call us, me, my sister, my cousin, say, y'all come upstairs. And we thinking we got in trouble. And she'd be like, all right, I'm going to teach y'all this song. And everybody remember their parts. So she made us sing in harmony. And, you know, that was just one of the many styles. Then I had my Uncle Larry. My Uncle Larry, who has three boys and a girl, he also sings. So he would make up songs on the spot and tell everybody to take a part. Jermaine, take the top. Lindell, take the middle. Rob, take the bottom. And that was a whole nother thing, like his style. And then my mom was always the same way. She would, whenever we were together, she would, like, sing or do a run here and tell me to mimic her, you know. So it was just so many elements. Then my Aunt Shaquita, she's the one that kind of started me off with, like, playing piano and, you know, showing me how to sing from different places, you know, like, as far as not being nasal or singing from your stomach and, like, singing with power, you know. It was a bunch of different elements. Then, of course, I had another side of my family, like, we were mainly, like, quartet, because that's what my family is. And then another side of my family, they're more contemporary. You know, they were doing the choir stuff and, like, singing with big names and stuff like that as well in the gospel realm. So, it's like, my style literally came from my family and the influences of people who they were on tour with. You know, like the Mighty Clouds of Joy, the Pilgrim Jubilee, Swanee Quintet, like Keith Wonderboy Johnson, before it was just him when his father was over. Casey and JoJo, when they were the Helly Singers, like these were all people that used to come to our anniversaries, you know, every year. So I would get to see all these people. You know, I see Spanky with the Mighty Clouds of Joy, then he ends up with Raphael Sadiq and D'Angelo.
Yeah.
You know, so there was just so many elements that helped me. Me having a cousin that played guitar professionally, it made me listen to guitar players. So it's my thought process of being able to hear these things. So a lot of times it's hard for people to hear what the instruments are really doing. You know, they just hear a beat, a little bit of sound, and vocals here and there, you know? So, that's just some of the things, but, man, it came from a lot of different places. A lot of influential people who I could say took part in, like, helping me mold my style.
You spoke of your family being a part of art. Touring with Keith Wonderboy Johnson. Were they on that live album? What year was it? I think 2001? Because that's one of my favorite quartet albums right there, that Keith Wonderboy Johnson. And they had one song on there called I Love You. It's one of my favorites. Because it's like a live tape. It was like a live taping, and I'm trying to remember who was all in it.
Nah, see, My family's first record was in 1981.
81, okay, so it's like...
It started
okay.
out a little way before.
Oh, you said with his father. Oh, when it was his father. Right, right, right.
Yeah.
I remember that. Okay.
When he was a
yeah.
kid.
Because he released one too, but it was like on that cusp of like 99, so that's when he started doing live albums and live concerts. I was just wondering, I was just curious if he was on, if somebody from there was on there. But yeah, you named a whole lot of quartet group, and it kind of goes into my next question of, like you said, like it's a lot of singers don't really, that's why I love the fact you said that do you know the piano fully, or you just know those, like, you know, certain, whenever you're trying to find your note and stuff like that, you know that, right? That you just trying to use it to hit. Okay. So my thing is, I feel like great singers, like, I think Prince is the thing to where, like, if you learn how to play the piano, if they start from there, then I feel like it really helps singers to really know, like, I feel like it takes your creativity to another level vocally. Because you can pretty much mimic the piano, and I think a lot of singers could benefit from that, from what mm-hmm. you're saying. And I think right. And I think what you did, I think just being a student of, because I always talk about that, being a student of the music, and I feel like the same goes to, I feel like even if you're a veteran, like how many years you've been, 20, 30 plus years, I feel like as long as you keep going and learning from the craft, and you keep getting better, you keep evolving and growing. So I want to know, with that, saying that, getting into, what was it, when did you start professionally? Was it the D'Angelo gig, or was it before then that you, did you like sing background for other people before you got that gig?
Well, I would say it started with my family.
Okay.
Yeah, I did my first live session, live recording with my family in 1991. Okay. It was a TV recording. And I remember, like, the guy that was supposed to play the drums, he didn't come. So they were trying to figure out who's going to play the drums. I was like, let me play. You know, I know all the songs, you know, so they let me play. The video is actually up on YouTube. Lumsy Sisters in Jersey City. It says in 91. So you see me like this little kid with gum in his mouth playing the drums. You know, that's when I first started. And then I kind of evolved from that into piano playing. Then I started playing for them piano. But as far as like mainstream, like industry mainstream, because this was before the internet and, you know, all of that was out. So I would say yes, it was D'Angelo. D'Angelo was the way into that door, you know?
Okay, because I'd heard his interview he did, and he was explaining how he got the band together, and I was just curious because he said that y'all performing at church, right? You and Red, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if y'all were together or not, but he was saying like that's where he had found y'all at in Virginia or whatever. And that's how that all happened. And I was just wondering if you had, but your background, I feel like church, I feel like gospel music is such an underrated skill, mm-hmm. in terms of I feel like you can carry that over professionally because it's way different. From,
right.
like, playing at church and playing it at a professional gig is two different things, but I feel like playing church music helps you in terms of the improvisation, like what jazz music is. If you play jazz music, it's sort of in the same vein of that, mm-hmm. because it's a lot of improvisation. It's not necessarily, like, you don't have to go off, like, not like a contemporary record. Like, if it's like a hymnal or something like that, like, right. you know, a deacon is singing, you pretty much have to follow whoever's leading the song, and that's how we learn, like, what key to play in, because some of them all don't sing the hymnals all in the same key, and it
right.
might be a different pattern, it might be a different drum, because I played all instruments in church, so I was, mm-hmm. like, trying to adapt to whatever anybody else was doing, so I want to know, what was in it particular, was it like an age, like was it like 13, 14 years old? Was it like you knew then, like when you said your aunt was teaching you how to sing on the whatever she was teaching you. Was it then that you started clicking for you, or was it like a little bit when you got older in terms of really understanding it?
Funny story was, when she first started teaching me, I was 7 years old, and it was kind of, it was funny because, like, when, if you ever saw the movie Ray, when he sat at the piano with the little boy, you know, that's kind of how I learned, the exact same way. That's exactly how I started. So I learned that particular, let's say, progression with the bass line. And then once I learned it, she gave me something else. I said, I want to learn all the songs from the Lumsey Sisters. And she taught me all the songs. I learned them. But this was like the 80s style of piano playing. Once 1990 came, 91, they had this thing called tritones that came out. And it was like, what was that? It was the wild chords, you know, but I was still playing, like, sounding like Little Richard. So, you know, like.
I know exactly. Because that's how most of the older church, if you had a church lady that played the piano, like, that's how they played it. So you get
confused.
Because all the church ladies growing up played that sound.
So I'm playing that sound. And I didn't want to play no more. I'm like, man, I don't want to play no more. You know, they laughing at me, you know, and all that stuff. Then a friend of mine named Paul Curtis, they were from North New Jersey. He was being taught, I can't think of the guy's name, but the original organ player from the Bobby Jones Show. So...
Oh, I know who it is, too, and it's slipping my brain. I know exactly who you're talking about, and it's my...
Slick hair, brown skin.
Yes, you know, yes. Oh, my God, I forgot his name. I know who you're talking about, too. Dang it. I'm going to have to Google this up.
My boy Paul was learning from him. So Paul showed me how to write chords down, like left hand, right hand, and...
Oh, my God.
He would give me chords, like tritones and different progressions. So once I started learning those tritones and the different progressions, it changed from everybody laughing at me to everybody calling me to come play for them.
Right.
You know, I always sang, but like my early teen years, 11, 12, 13, 14, I was more so into playing. Of course, my cousins, Jubal and Eric, they were like, man, you got to be able to do both, play and sing. So... I wanted to be the best player I could be because they were like masters of their crafts. And I always felt like my voice was my best instrument. But I wanted to try to match it with the piano. And in high school, maybe when I was about 16, I moved to Chesterfield, Virginia. And I was staying with my Uncle Larry, who sings, and his two sons, they played instruments, guitar, bass, drums. So we started a group called the Lumsey Boys. And, of course, an extension of the Lumsey Sisters, but our first gig that we did was at the anniversary of the Henley Singers, who just so happened to be D'Angelo's family.
Mm-hmm.
So it was our first time singing there, and we sang there, and then they, you know, after we finished, they stopped and said, hey, this was their first concert ever, y'all. They sound amazing. And then Marlon Cox, D'Angelo's first cousin, he said, I'm going to introduce you to my cousin. I said, who is the cousin? He said, D'Angelo. I said, yeah, right. I said, that's not your cousin. I said, yeah, right, whatever, man. He said, no, man, that's my cousin for real. I'm going to bring y'all in the studio. He brought us to the studio at his house. We created a track. We did a song called My God Is There. Myself and my two cousins, Lindell and Arrell. And he was like, man, I'm going to send this to D. D I said, man, stop saying that's your cousin, man. I don't believe you. But sure enough, it was his cousin. But I came back to New Jersey with my cousin Arvell. They ended up starting a band called the Soul Disciples Gospel Group Quartet.
I know that group. Wow.
Yeah, Isaiah Sharkey, Blake Williams, Dee's cousins, Raphael and Marlon Cox.
Yeah.
Arvell Lumsey, Isaiah Sharkey.
There was some back to listen to the audience, the people he named it. If you're in the gospel realm, these are some, I just want to let y'all know, these are some bad cats right here that be going, that mean they're incredible. So he's, I feel like you just name dropped it right now, and I'm getting envious.
And I'm forgetting one person. On base, he had Emmanuel Harris.
You over here name dropping, man. I know that it's all there. That's crazy. It's a small world. It's a really small world.
After they formed that group, D'Angelo and my cousin Arvell, they became good friends. So basically, D'Angelo kept saying, hey, when I come out, I'm going to take you on tour. Talking to my cousin Arvell, he said, you know anybody who could blend with us as far as our voices? He said, my cousin Jermaine. And literally, fast forward, like, years later, like 10 years later, I remember sitting in my apartment in New Jersey. My cousin Arvell said, hey, man, D'Angelo wants to come on tour. I didn't believe him. I said, yeah, right, man. And sure enough, Alan Lee, he was a tour manager for, like, Prince and James Brown. Also, D'Angelo, mm-hmm. He called. He said, hi, my name is Alan Lee, and I'm calling because D'Angelo wants you to come on tour. So would you be available? I said, yes, absolutely. Rehearsals start January 3rd, 2012. So that was my start. I thought I was going to have to battle singers because I never did anything like that before. And then I get there, and me and my cousin Arvell are the only ones there. So I get there, and he was like, put me on the spot. It's like Questlove and Jesse Johnson, Pino Palladino, all these cats that are like superstars. And I'm watching, that I've been watching on TV, they're in front of me now. They tell me to sing on the spot. So, of course, they say, sing something, man. And I'm like, I don't know what to sing. He's like, I know quartet. He was like, you know the Jubes? And I looked at D'Angelo and said, what you know about the Jubes? And then he started singing a song called Old Ship of Zion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I took the top, my cousin Arvell took the bottom, and we just did one verse and a hook, and literally everybody started clapping, you know, and Alan Lees and D'Angelo came and said, Jermaine, can I speak with you outside, please? And I said, oh, man, I must have been horrible, man, they about to fire me. And right, so I get outside, and D'Angelo and Alan was like, hey, man, this is your job. As long as you want to keep it. And they asked me if I knew someone else who could sing with us. And I said, of course, my cousin Red. And I called him up, said, Red, where you at? Get here now, D'Angelo. We about to be on tour with D'Angelo. And he came the next day, Kendra Foster came, and we became the Vanguard Singers. How it started with us.
Right. Getting into the album Black Messiah release in 2014, it's actually the fifth anniversary was this past Sunday.
Right.
5 years. And y'all did the one that I heard, that was the first song on the album y'all featured on it, you, your cousin Red, and then Arvell, and then Kendra, all in that, doing the background on there. And what was the process of making, or the first, what was the first song that y'all worked on? Was it that one? When y'all started recording?
It was Ain't That Easy.
Okay.
It was, we pretty much learned these songs from the first rehearsals. And then, you know, we just, he said, hey, we're going to go in and record these songs after the first tour. So we went in. Everyone knew their parts already. And, like, it was literally one take for all of us. We did separate parts, you know, but it was literally one take. And they said, hey, I think we're good. And then we went into Another Life. Same thing. It was just one of those experiences where it's just like when you sing with certain people and everyone is doing their part correctly, the sound that you create, just it can be a beautiful thing, you know. And we were just in tune with each other at that time, and we're lucky enough to, you know, be some of the first singers that ever, like, recorded on a D'Angelo record before.
Mm-hmm.
That weren't, you know, and we never had any, like, huge people that we worked with. It was just, he just believed in us so much. And, you know, I'm just glad we didn't let him down, you know? So,
right.
Yeah, that worked out, and that's how that process went.
And so, y'all did the, after the album release, y'all prepared for the Second Coming tour. I went to the Dallas show. It was incredible. With all you experienced, what was it that, was there anything about touring with D'Angelo that you didn't know about performing live? Was there anything in particular that you learned that you didn't know before traveling with during on that tour, Second Coming tour?
Well, for me, I would say the preparation that it takes. Like, if you're an artist and you do, like, just, like, jams with your song and you're kind of free, that's one thing. But when you're an artist, where you want everything exactly how you had it, every part, every change, every break on the, you know, in the music and everything, that's when it becomes pretty much orchestrated. Mm-hmm. Like, how to orchestrate your music and not just have the same simple loop just happening over and over again. And that is like, you have to remember these parts. After the third verse, halfway through the second hook, we're going to go into this James Brown thing. We're going to go into this song. Then there's going to be this crazy breakdown. And then we're going to go into this little part from this Sly Stone record or something. You know, it's just crazy how he orchestrates his music. Like, I've never met a person like that in my life. It's so different, unique, his own sounds, it's everything, how he does it, it's just different. So I have to give, like, huge shout out to, like, D'Angelo, Questlove, Dino Palladino, James Poison, you know, all those cats. They were, Jeff Lee Johnson and Spanky Alford, all those cats that were around, they were, like, you know, huge factors in the music. Their quartet styles and, like, well, Spanky, his quartet playing mixed with jazz. Mm-hmm. Questlove's pocket. Then they had a guy named Chilo Sanders. He was the front of house guy. He was like, you know, that sound that came, that was so new, and with Questlove's drum sound, it was like, we had never heard anybody's drums sounding like this before. And then you find out, like, man, like, this combination, all these elements are what made this sound. And it opens up your eyes and your ears to music, and it helps you understand it
a little more once you get on the inside and you're learning these parts. And you're like, ah, all this time I thought I was doing it right, but I really wasn't.
Right. And you're leading into another question I had with regards to you released your new album, Stronger Than My Fears, last week on December 5th. And it's 10 songs. And, well, even before we get to your album, you did, after a little short time after Black Messiah, after y'all got off tour, when did the whole connection with, when you became part of P-Rock and the Soul Brothers, what was that? I know you and Red, was it just you, or is it you and Red that's a part of
P-Rock? It was just me.
Just you, right.
Yeah.
Right. How did that connection happen?
Well, a couple of friends of mine who I work with, Marcus Machado and Daru Jones.
Oh, yeah,
They were in the band with mm-hmm. P-Rock. Daru Jones was and still is the MD. So mm-hmm. I saw the first show, and it was like P-Rock and the Soul Brothers. But I was looking for the artist that was going to be standing out front, you know, like, who's up there rapping, vocals or rapping or something? And they said it was nobody, but they were just, like, playing all the hits that he had. You know, it was, like, crazy. So I called them up. I said, yo, man. I said, how y'all had a show with P-Rock and the Soul Brothers and you ain't call the Soul Brother to come and sing with y'all? So Daru and Marcus, they were like, nah, actually, that would be a dope look. Why don't you give me a second? I'm going to holler at Pete's manager. Make a long story short, Pete said, come to the rehearsal. I get to the rehearsal. He had never met me before. We met. I sang, we did James Brown tunes, a couple Earth, Wind, and Fire tunes. And I remember after the rehearsal, Pete Rock, we're talking, and just came over. He was like, man, God sent you here. And he was like, thank you. You know, like, super humble. And I'm mm-hmm. just like, I can't believe this is coming from the legendary Pete Rock, you know. And I was just blown away, and I said, I'm honored to be up here, you know, to rep this crew, P-Rock and the Soul Brothers. Because, you know, I'm a soul singer. I don't even like to put a name on it, but if I had to name it something, I would just say soul. You know, because that's where it's coming from. And ever since that day, I've been rocking with him hard. That's my big brother.
Yes, shout out to Daru. That's my guy right there. He's been on the show too. He came on. I think he was, they were midway doing shows with P-Rock and Soul Brothers when he came on. So shout out to Daru. That's my guy. We're working on getting, Mark Stone. That's my guy. But, getting into your album, cause I know Daru's on there. Again, shout out to him. He's killing it.
Yeah.
And also, you have Marcus on there too, don't you?
Nah, Marcus not on the album.
Okay.
Marcus was on the single I put out.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Right,
that's what I'm thinking of.
Right.
That's what I'm thinking of is the video, because I had seen him on there, and I was like, oh, yeah. And you had Kendra, your bandmate from Vanguard, Kendra Foster on, and I know she co-wrote on one of those songs. I think it was Time. I think it's the last song on the album. Yes. And you have a few more features on there, but the whole album, Stronger Than My Fears, I listened to it, and I couldn't stop listening to it. I think I listened to it all last week, maybe up until Sunday, I listened to it. And my thing, excuse me, when I review albums, when I listen to it, I like sitting with it for a good while, and I listen to it in like 2 to 3 different places. I might go out in public and listen to it when I go in the car and I'm at home, and I listen to it from the speakers so I can hear it, because I hear it differently from the speakers and in my headphones, and then I just sit with it. And when I heard the whole album, I say it's like 3 things with a quality album for it to like fully like be cohesive, is that it's like 3 elements. You got to have the lyric form has to be quality, the singing in the production. And I feel like if one of those things are off, then it's, then the quality of the album isn't really there. And I'll say, like, this album, Stronger My Fears, all three align. Like, even with Never Knew My, like, Never Knew Love is the first song off the album, and it just sets the tone. I know Daru played on that one, didn't he?
On that song, it's a guy from Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh, okay.
JT Crush Ice Rollison that's playing on that song. Daru played on Be Easy.
Okay.
And Change the World. And him and JT are on Money, Power, Respect.
That first song, and Tomorrow, that's the one that's the repeat value is so high because I keep listening to it. I love the rapper on it. I think his name is Noble Rocket. I never heard of him before I started.
Yeah, Noble Rocket. And, that's my brother. Yeah. That's my little brother.
Okay. He can rap.
Yeah. Because
this starts off the song, and I'm like, and then it just takes you on a journey. I like listening to albums that take you on a journey, like Never Knew Love. The rhythm, it's like he's playing, it's like a regular rhythm, and then it starts flipping, the rhythm starts changing up throughout the song, and it's like only 2 minutes long, but two minutes, 40 seconds, whatever. And I'm like, yo, I wish this song was longer, cause it was that good. I was like, I didn't want it to end. And then there's so many of them that I like. I think Be Easy and, Time, Respect My Craft, and, It's a lot of, I can't even pick my favorite one on, but do you have like a top three from there that you like from the album?
If I had to pick a top three, my first favorite is Sunshine.
Okay.
Cause that's like, Sunshine is like what I would call a Lumsy sound that represents my family. You know, and the singer that's on the end of Sunshine, that's my cousin, Lindell Lumsy, who I grew up with, who was living in my uncle's house with me when we actually sang with D'Angelo, at his right. family's, quartet anniversary. Then I would say Never Knew Love and then Respect My Craft.
So that's
my top three.
Man, it's amazing you said you loved the song Sunshine because it gave me a quartet, like all your harmonies on there gave me a quartet feel. Same thing with, excuse me, Black Messiah. Like it gave me that same, not necessarily comparing it, but I get where the gospel influence is there. And why, you know, you were chosen, to be a part of that because you get it in terms of the harmonies and the songwriting. I feel like it's like and that's another question I had with your songwriting. When did that start? When did you start writing songs?
Oh man. I was writing songs at a very young age. I used to write poems actually. We had this thing in church called the District Union because I was in everything you could possibly be in church. It was like I was forced. So, you know, they were like, hey, we're gonna do these poems. So I started writing poems. And you know, with poems you have to make words rhyme and it definitely has to make sense. You know, so I kinda like morphed into it. I would say maybe like 11, 12. Is when I started writing. But, you know, I had another big cousin, Tyson Bellamy, who was the guy that was like, okay, this is Herbie Hancock, this is Bob James, this is Ahmad Jamal, this is John Coltrane, this is Miles Davis. And, you know, he would, like, just put me up on different artists and different people, Curtis Mayfield, and that's my favorite writer to this day. Curtis Mayfield, he's one of the best to ever grace the stage as far as writing and just all around. So, became a thing, I was young, and I just wanted things to have a meaning behind it. Like, not just put out a song, and it's like, you saying what you gonna do to the person, oh, when I get in the bed, I'm gonna do this and do that, and we gonna, you know, just the basic stereotypes for black people. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to give a positive message and let people know they could make it, bring awareness, like we could change the world, you know, and like my purpose, like letting people know, like everybody has fears, but am I stronger than my fears, you know? Don't give up. Keep going. You know, like, you can make it. Encouraging people. True love.
Right.
You know, that's what it was all about.
And you know what? When you said poetry, it makes 100% sense. Because with that kind of writing form, you have to be, like, more expressive in terms of the vocabulary in certain ways you say words. So,
right.
Like, with journalists and how we write, you got to find a different, like, saying, like, I love you, like, I'm in, like, you have to find ways to say, okay, beyond the obvious, what, how can I say this? And that,
right.
Like I said, get back to Never Knew Love. You said, I'm trying to remember the lyric. You said, let me have a little talk with your mind and let my energy speak to your soul. Like, that's, like, poetic. The
right.
Whole song is poetic, and it's expressing it, and it's, like, in most, speaking about love in a deaf way instead of just, like, an easy go-to, and I'm like, it would just seem like it was way more, you know what I mean, like an experienced writer that's writing this, and not just, because, and I looked at all the credits and your co-writing all up, and I'm like, yo, this is, I'm like, what is the history behind this, because your songwriting skills, I'm telling you, it's on the elite level, it's only certain people that have that ability, and your concept of, I feel like great songwriters have a great concept of melody, and I feel like all the songs on Stronger Than My Fears have a really great concept, and that way to where you can create those harmonies and create those ad-libs around the melody to where it, like, all makes sense, you know what I mean, with the, like, it doesn't sound like
yeah.
It's out of place, like, if you do a certain kind of note, if you do that because you're following, it's like the melody is the, like, the main force behind the song, and I'm just
mm-hmm.
Just really, like, a big fan of, like, this album. It's great, but I'm going to throw it to my co-host, EB, and see if he got some questions for you.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm still really, really bugging that the Lumsey Sisters are, like, your family. I know growing up, I listened to them so much. My mom and my grandparents, like they listen to the Lumsey Sisters, the Williams Sisters, the Brown Singers, the Canned Spirituals, Lee Williams and the Spiritual QCs. Like, that was their sound pocket. So that's a lot of what I listened to growing up. So it's just wild that, which one is your mother?
One of the twins, Lois, is my mom.
Wow. That's just really, it's kind of crazy. Coming from, you know, these two amazing vocal families, did that ever add any additional pressure on you to prove yourself as a singer?
Absolutely. It, like, for me, it was always a thing, like, sometimes your family might kind of overlook you and what you bring to the table and actually just be seeing everything else that's going on. But all the people around them are like, what are you talking about? You got it right here. You know, like, this is all you need. You got your family. And it was just, you know, when I was younger, I wanted to, man, let me get on, please. I know I could do it, you know. And I had to wait. But it's okay. I'm glad that I did, because it helped me become a better player, think differently, have so much discipline. Quartet music is probably the most disciplined genre of music,
mm-hmm.
with the breakdowns and the quiet down, and you have to be on point with everything. And if you miss it, the look that they will give you is like, you know you're going to get in trouble when this is all over. But that's what helps you stay alert, pay attention, call and response type of stuff, knowing when to do stuff and when not to do stuff. That's one of the hardest things for an artist, singer, musician. One thing you can't buy is feel. They don't teach that in school. So, you know, that's one of the things that that helped to mold me overall, like with discipline, knowing when to hit this note on the side in between, you know, the chorus, right after D'Angelo does his riff, you know, like just to compliment him and to push us and knowing how to push a singer, you know, and not try to be the front guy, you know, stay in your place and compliment the singer, you know, so it was all a learning experience, like coming together and just learning and growing nonstop, like to this day. The growing never stops. The learning never stops.
Now, do you think that both you and D'Angelo, coming from that world of gospel and quartet singers, do you think that you both having those similar origins helped you in your journey when you were working with him?
Absolutely. Because before that, I learned how to read music at a young age. I started with the trombone, you know, and drums and piano was just like self-taught, and like hear it from a person and they're showing you, learning by ear. So when I got with D'Angelo, it was just like, oh man, this quartet stuff. But there was also like jazz and hip hop and behind the beat stuff and, you know, like Parliament stuff, like where we're like octaving and three octaves and, you know, it was just so different. So I would say yes, a lot of it was quartet, but a lot of it was other stuff too. And if you didn't know it, you had to learn it. You had to be one of those people that are like a sponge. Once you learn it, you got it. You know,
right.
So that was us. We almost always mimicked everything we would hear. And just being around him, hearing him do stuff, and actually sitting with him at a piano, he's giving us our notes. And that was an experience that of a lifetime, you know, something that'll stick with you forever. And it helps overall your thinking and your placement and, like, your timing, you know, just everything about it. It's just, it was so different and so strategic. You had to be on point to even be able to hang with those guys. You know, so that definitely helped the influence of quartet gospel, yes.
Yeah, I saw Devil's Pie earlier this year twice, and it was one of those moments when you're like listening. I can hear how great D'Angelo is, but you know there are moments in the documentary just watching him work, watching you guys work, watching him weave together, you know, different elements from different genres of music to make this amazing piece of art. It's still kind of mind blowing to witness. So I can only imagine you being there and working with him. Like, you just kind of taking it all in, but at the same time, like, you are part of that greatness. Like, you are part of what makes it so amazing, because it took you guys all working together and being on one accord. Like you said, like, kind of, if you don't know, you have to learn it and follow it behind each other. So I always think it's so interesting to talk to the people who are not necessarily the main person, like, in the spotlight. So that's
right.
Amazing. You've worked with some amazing people just all around. I know you've worked with Chris Dave and Keon Harrell. Those are two of my favorites. I saw them a couple times this year.
Absolutely.
Who is on your list of, like, dream collaborations? Like, who have you not worked with that you would really, really like to work with? I mean, you
that's
work with a little
one.
Bit of everybody.
That's a hard one. Because, well, I would say a lot of, I love hip hop music.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, you know, I would love to work with a Jay-Z or a Nas or, you know, like to be able to do a song with like Jasmine Sullivan or like the soulful artist, soulful artist. But that's a hard one. You know, of course you have like the great Stevie Wonder and, you know, Layla Hathaway. You know, it's so many people I could name. So many people. A lot of my favorite artists are like really in gospel. Mm-hmm. Crystal Rucker, Lisa Knowles, Kim Burrell, Nikki Ross. You know, but then of course you have like the Fred Hammonds and all the other artists. But that's a hard one. That is so hard. There's so many artists I would love to work with. You know, but I've met a lot of them, man. You know, just let them know that I have huge amounts of respect for them and thankful for them and their craft and the things that they've done in the industry, stuff like that. But it's a hard one. I love hip-hop. There's a bunch of musicians that are crazy out there. There's just so many people. I just love innovative people, people who are like futuristic, and just stick to, and also stick to what they do.
Right.
You know, like, your own style, creating styles, creating, you know, experimental music, and like, these things become a trend, and you notice like young players, young singers, they start, you know, taking after you. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty inspiring to see young artists, you know, young musicians taking after the people that came before them. Because a lot of times they get overlooked by the next generation who, sincerely, like, never heard of these people. And then when they finally do catch on and then they pick up on it and they're at a young age, it's like they become the future. So, yeah, it's so many people, so many areas, so many states that have amazing things, amazing musicians, amazing arrangers, horn players, you know, string players, and all of that. So I just say I want to work with everybody.
I understand. I mean, you were talking about, like, there's a certain level of authenticity that comes from certain artists that's so inspiring. And I personally just think that is that's one of the things that makes me fall in love with the people that I love musically, is this,
right,
this authenticity and this vulnerability that they're able to display the most inner parts of themselves through their art. I think it's amazing. Switching gears a little bit, the album, Bigger Than My Fears, what inspired the title for you?
For me, it's a song called My Purpose. That's on the record. And that's a part of the hook. So it's like, I kind of break it down a little bit. It starts out with trying to balance my insecurities, trying to push through all of my fears. Giving up is not an option. Hard work, blood, sweat, and tears. They said this road ain't easy. Lord knows I'm giving it my all. And then I say, I can hear my mother's voice saying, you can do it, son, just trust in God. And the hook comes in. Am I stronger than my fears? Am I going to give up? Will I let my life hold me back? No. Do I have what it takes? I done rocked with the best. This must be my purpose. So I had to ask myself a question. Am I stronger than my fears? Am I going to just keep, you know, doing everything for everybody else? You know, being in everybody else's bands and not ever give it a shot, you know, myself. So I named it Stronger Than My Fears because that was a fear that I had that, what if I put this out, my music out, and they don't like it? You know, and that was a big fear of mine. That's why I waited seven, almost 8 years to put out my first record since I've been in the industry. And, you know, I had to push through all of my fears, like I said in the verse, and here we are today, you know.
And what was when you sat down and decided, you know, it's time, like Stronger Than My Fears has to happen. It's my time now. I got to prove that I can do it on my own and not be a part of what anyone else is doing for me. What's that process for you like for making an album? Like, did you write the lyrics first? Did you decide who you wanted to work on at first? Like, how long did it take? What's the album making process like for you?
Well, I produce and I play keys, so I pretty much had the album ready myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I got with my producer, my MD, Roger Simmons, out of Charleston, South Carolina. And I said, bro, I want to take this to the moon. Like, the music and, like, what I put down, I want to take it to the highest level that we could possibly get it musically. And I had him reproduce the things that I produced and, you know, a couple collaborations in there. And my brother, the one who rapped on Time, I mean on Tomorrow's Not Promised, he co-wrote a couple of songs as well, like Money, Power, Respect, and Anything Is Possible. So I would just like work every day, like bang out 15 beats every single day, and then it's like, oh, this one's special. And I put it aside, and this is what was going on the album. And that's pretty much how that came in. I did it myself, and then, you know, a couple collabos. I could hear certain things. I want strings, so I have a buddy from the Netherlands named Yannick Hewat. I met him. He was like 19 years old. He was like the first black dude that I ever saw in my life that had his own orchestra. That was like, it's like rare. We don't see that much here in the States. And it just blew my mind. That was always a dream of mine, like to be singing with an orchestra, you know, 100-piece orchestra, 60-piece orchestra, something like that, and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Got him to play the strings, you know, got cats that specialize in those instruments to replay these things, add their flavor. Shout out to the 420s from Charleston, South Carolina, Roderick, JT, Vonnie, Antoine Gant. Those guys came in and knocked everything out, one take, just song by song by song. And, you know, of course, I called my brother Keon Harrell to play on Never Knew Love and Money, Power, Respect. And Daru Jones. It's just like, when it's a certain vibe, the song, there are certain people who just like lock in with. So, you know, I had to do that and get those people on this record. And shout out to Matt Zutel and Matthew Garber, also from Charleston, South Carolina, for making the master of this project. And, you know, that's pretty much how it all came. And, of course, I called my sister, Kendra Foster.
Mm-hmm.
I let her hear a track that I had started. And I said, I think this would be a beautiful song to get together. And she's like, oh, my God, I love it, I love it. Send it to me now. Send it to me now while I have this in my head. Send it, hurry up. So I sent it, and she came up with this amazing verse. this outro for the song. It became one of the people's favorite songs.
I mean, it's I get it. It's Kendra Foster. I mean,
yeah.
I just have to say, I'm a South Carolina native, and you know, you've mentioned Charleston, South Carolina quite a bit. So I just want to go on record as saying, you know, we got some talented musicians down in the Lowcountry, especially in South Carolina. You know, Charleston, that sound that comes out of there. People don't give Charleston the shine like that, but it's there. There's talent there. I know you mentioned the song, Sunshine earlier. Would you say that's the song on the album that is, most personal to you?
To me, yes, because, I have three family members singing on that song with me. So I would say yes. Sunshine and Be Easy, for two reasons. One, R.L. Lumsey and Red Middleton are my cousins that sang with me in the Vanguard. They're on that song singing backgrounds with me. And then my cousin Lindell Lumsey, one of the ones who started out singing with us, he was the one singing at the end of Sunshine. And Be Easy, because my cousin Tyson Bellamy, the one who taught me how to produce and taught me what was a good kick drum and what was a good snare drum and what cymbal sounded real, just how to program drums. Like, before I knew who Jay Dilla was, that was my Dilla. And he actually introduced me to Jay Dilla and DJ Premier and Molly Mall and just so many artists, Pete Rock, and, you know, artists like that. So I would say Sunshine first, just because it defines my family now.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think it's I mean, it's still for me, and my mind is still blown that the Lumsey sisters are, you know, that's amazing. But I think your family, just the fact that there are so many people who are so skilled and so talented in different areas of music. Like most families, you know, you'll have a family that's a family of vocalists, or you'll have a family as a family of instrumentalists. Like, that's their thing, but you have both. And then
right.
You have production. Like, that, to me, I think it kind of set you up, and it laid groundwork for the makings of, like, a legendary artist. Like, I can see and hear you being one of those artists that defined a sound, free of genre, but I can hear that and see that for you, like you being one of those. But then this is my last question. When, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years from now, what would you like the legacy of Jermaine Holmes to be? Like, what would you like people to most remember, or the first thing to pop into their minds when they hear your name?
When they hear my name, to know, like, not to give up. Like, anything you want to do in life, anything you want to be in life, whether it's music, a president, a multimillionaire, whatever it is, like, you can do it. You just have to put in work. That's it. You got to put that work in, and you have to perfect your craft, and and never get comfortable. Because the moment you get comfortable, that's the moment you fall behind. And just keep going. You could do anything. That's the legacy I want to leave. Just encouragement, awareness, peace, and, like, real love, genuine love. You know, that's when they think of Jermaine, like, that's the legacy I want to leave behind.
Oh, thank you. That's deep.
I was going to get back to, I only had like two questions regarding the album in terms of the live. Do you plan on, like, what's the creativity with, are you going to do this live, make this a live album, or tour off this? What's the, do you plan on, like, creating, like, a whole band and taking this on the road?
Oh, yeah, this is, it's going to be called Jermaine Holmes and the Soulful Congregation. I have my band, background singers, you know, orchestra. It's going to be serious. Definitely plan on doing a tour, you know, promo tour first, of course, and then,
right,
you know, hitting some festivals, you know, just getting the word out that we're here.
Okay.
You know, and, yeah, we're going to get this thing rolling. There's a lot of great things coming. Now, I don't want to let the cat out the hat, but we have some really nice things coming very soon, and we definitely plan on, you know, getting this music out there and continuing to put out more music, and build a brand, you know, that represents our culture and our people the proper way. There's a lot of negativity that's being portrayed on our people, and the way they're doing it is by brainwashing our youth. And it's like, you can be dope, you can still be respected, and you can do positive music, and you can still be a man and carry yourself a certain way, you know, instead of, you know, like when the music industry went from teaching to gangster, you know, like, you don't have to, like, be in this box to make it. You can do it on your own independently, and also you can reach the masses. You just got to put your work in, put your feet on the ground, go to these places so they know who you are, you know, and yeah, that's one of those
things. Got it. We got this game we play on the show with our guests. We call the What's Wrong With You game.
It's rigged.
It's pretty much, I knew he was going to say that. That's our engineer, producer on the show. He's telling you fabrication is not rigged. It's a great game. It's basically an either or game. Basically, the simple rules is you have to pick what I pick, and if you don't pick what I pick,
it's rigged.
What's wrong with you? It's not rigged at all. And yeah, it gets a little tricky in there. I make up the rules as I go. So. Yeah, no pressure at all. So, you'll get carded. Basically, you just pick the artist that I'm naming, you just pick the artist that you have more of their music on your playlist. That's the rule of the game. You have to pick. Just pick one artist that, you play more on your playlist. So the first one is Marvin Gaye or Teddy Pendergrass.
Marvin.
Talking right. Like I said, it's a little tricks in there. You didn't get, that's bonus. It's like little bonuses in there, so sometimes it's like little tricks and stuff because I make them up as I go. So,
okay.
And I try to throw people off with it. But the next one is the Whispers or the OJs.
OJs.
You're talking right. The next one is Prince or Rick James.
Prince.
Talking right. Okay, this is where I make them up as I go. So this is all these. The next one you have to get right, or you get a What's Wrong With You. And so. This one is Michael Jackson specific. Off the Wall or Thriller?
Thriller.
Wait. Say that again. You said, say
Thriller.
It again.
Thriller.
Thriller?
Yep.
And you, that's what he said.
He said Thriller.
Jermaine.
Thriller.
Name me three songs in 15 seconds off of Thriller. Three songs in 15 seconds off of Thriller.
I'm just going off impact.
Okay, That's not the rules of the game. The rules of the game is what do you have more Thriller or Off the Wall in your playlist?
I don't have either one in my playlist, but
we're getting to the truth. Okay.
I'm just saying, so
you don't have either one. So what's the three songs that if they played at a show or something like that, like if you went to like a DJ set or something like that, you want to hear Rock With You or Beat It? Where are you going with?
This
are you gonna go
of
with
my,
the Black Jam or the Caucasian hit?
Just because of how I party, I'm going to say, just beat it!
Jermaine, stop lying to me. You is not listening to that. Open the clock.
I'm going to do the whole dance.
You going to do the whole choreography? Listen, I do it too, if I'm drunk, but that's besides the point. So you'll go to a party and rather listen to Beat It over Rock With You. Are you talking about, oh my God. I just feel like that album is anti-blackness because.
Okay.
Off the Wall is the black album. It's the ultimate black album.
Let me give you my reason.
It's the blackest album ever.
But let me give you my reason behind it.
Okay.
For this comparison, right? Just the beat in itself. You like Rock With You. I'm a quartet head. So. You got to me, I'm more like the music is first what gets me, and when I heard that line, that really got me. So it sounds like a drive. It sounds like a drive to me, like the way the song is put together, so that is more impactful to me than the Rock With You. Okay, I like the harmonies and, you know, the way the bass line is and just the song altogether, but I'm going with Beat It.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so you don't get a What's Wrong With You, but you definitely get a negative 27 points.
Told you it was real.
What's wrong with you on that? Because I let your explanation makes sense now, okay? As long as it makes sense. Then you'll get it What's Wrong. So you don't get it What's Wrong With You, you get negative 27. So the next one is, now I'm scared how you going to answer this next one, Aretha or Patty?
I would say Aretha. Or
Aretha. So you positive. So you got more Aretha on your playlist than Patty.
My favorite singer in the whole entire world. Her style came from Aretha.
So your answer is you play more Aretha on your playlist than Patty.
Yes, but I don't have neither one of them in my playlist.
Again,
artists don't listen to nobody. But we know in our studying. You know, we do listen to all of them. You know, but man, we don't listen. Not even playing nobody out or nothing. You know, that came before us. They opened up avenues for a lot of artists, all of that. But
I'm not buying it.
I'm just not waking up and just going to play. Even though I love this song.
Oh, yeah, only you do.
You know, like,
everybody loves that song.
You can't.
Yeah. This, so, okay, so your answer is you listen to more Patty than is what I'm hearing. Man, I'm trying to set it up for you to win. I don't know if you're getting the clues that I'm trying to drop out. You're supposed to pick Patty on that one. I don't know what you're talking about. But then,
How can you pick Patty?
That is a known fact. People play
Patty
more Patty than Aretha. This is
when
known.
Patty got her style from Aretha. Like, how can
oh
you?
Oh my God!
How can you?
We're not talking about style. We're talking about replay value of catalog. I'm saying I hear way more people listen to Patti than Aretha. If I pull up somebody's phone, I see more Patti than Aretha. I feel like that's enough. Okay, you know what? I don't know how to feel about this. I feel like you're gonna be the first person on this show that's gonna get a straight up what's wrong with you, because you answered two. I don't know if I can let you get away with getting two back to back. Wait, actually, you got three, because you didn't even pick. You didn't pick off the wall. I don't know. Okay, so you get negative 2 points on this Aretha. You damn near got a what's wrong with you, because you didn't win. Okay. The last one,
that's
maybe
a damn
the last
shame.
One can save you. Baby face.
That's a damn shame.
Rigged.
It is rigged.
Okay, maybe this last one will save you. Babyface or Brian McKnight?
Babyface.
Okay, you talking, okay. Okay, this is a bonus. This is like a trifecta, this is like a triple-double answer, so you might get the whole thing if you answer this right. Okay, Faith Evans versus Mary J. Blige. Who do you think? It's three questions here. Who do you think had the best debut album? Who had the best sophomore album? And who do you think is vocally good? That's the third question.
Okay. Vocally good, Faith. Well, hold on. What's the first question? Let's start.
First one is who had the best debut album, and the second one is who had the best sophomore album?
To be honest, I don't remember off the top of my head.
What's the 411 is Mary's debut album, and Faith's debut album is her self-titled Faith album.
With As Soon As I Get Home and all of that?
Yep.
I don't know. That was hard, because during that time, like, music was weird. It was like these sounds. It was all these sounds that were like synth out, and they had all this reverb on all the vocals, and it kind of sounded weird, Faith. So,
so who you got for debut and sophomore? Is it okay? So you got Mary for debut, and then sophomore, do you remember Keep the Faith versus My Life?
I have to go with Mary on that.
Okay, so we got 2 out of 3. Okay, that's not bad. Okay, the conclusion of the game is there's nothing wrong with Mr. Jermaine Holmes. He won the game. There's nothing wrong with you.
I could have told you that.
You shooting kind of like Steph was in during the Toronto series, but that's okay. Before you got injured, it's okay. You got it a little bit. You saved it a little bit at the end when you picked David Faith. But
that's
thank you so
given.
Much for coming on. Thank you so much for coming on. Jermaine Holmes, new album, Stronger Than My Fears, is out today on digital outlets, also available on a physical CD copy, but it's on all digital outlets, any streaming service that you use. Thank you so much for coming on the show, man. I appreciate it. This was amazing, and I learned a whole lot about you. I think just your everything that you were saying, I could relate to the whole process of you learning musically as a musician, and then also how you developed your skills as a background vocalist and all that stuff. And I think everything that's happened in your whole songwriting and singing story is divinity. That's why I think, like, divine timing with, you know, learning from, you know, having relatives and cousins that, you know, were a part of the industry that sing and all that stuff, and then all that timing in there. You said it took 7 years to create this album, but I think all that, the preparation you needed with just being a student of the craft, and then, you know, experiencing being on tour and singing background with D'Angelo, I think all that honed all those skills and gave you all the tools you needed to create your album. So I love it. It's amazing. It's definitely in my rotation going into 2020. It's amazing. You're absolutely, I think, one of the brightest, like, soul stars coming out right now, because this is elite level songwriting and production. So appreciate you for coming on and just sharing your time with us. We appreciate it. Make sure y'all get that new album, Stronger Than My Fears.
And I just want to thank y'all for having me. You know, this is going to be my first radio interview for any record.
Wow.
So,
wow.
You know, shout out to you guys. Thank you so much. You know, it's definitely divine. You know, none of this was planned. It was planned, but it was the way everything came together.
Right.
People that were on it. When how we met, this, it could be a movie. And I'm just thankful just to be able to share my gift with everybody, you know.
Wow. Thank you. Like I said, thank you so much for coming on. Make sure y'all get that new album. And yeah, man. Are you going to be at NAMM 2020?
Yep.
Oh, you might see me there. I'll definitely plan on being there.
I will be there.
I was hitting up Daru and them. I was like, man, I was like, we got to do something. I'm trying to hit him up and trying to do something, trying to get in on it. But yeah, I hit you up. Off the radio.
Yeah,
thank you so much for lending us your time. And we're going to go to break real quick. This is a song that Jermaine Holmes was a part of. This is D'Angelo and the Vanguard, Ain't That Easy. And we're about to go to break. And when we come back, I don't know what we're going to do when we come back. I don't know if we got enough time for 6 minutes break. But we'll be back after the break, and we'll figure it out when we get back. Well, if you're ready, we go to break.
Girl.
D'Angelo and the Vanguard. Hey, welcome back. This is the Soul Savvy Show with Q Lynn and EB.
It's my jam. It's one of my favorites off of the Black and Shine album. It's amazing. Man, that album, it was just, like I said earlier when we were doing the interview with Jermaine Holmes, that is the fifth anniversary was this past Sunday, and it's just, I sit with that album so many times, and it's like, it's such a, like a Mount Olympus styled album, like to where it's like, you can't even, it's so many, like, nuggets you can get from it, like, musically, and there's so many elements to it. It's just incredible, and just how that whole album's orchestrated. I love it. When Jermaine Holmes interviewed him earlier in the show, if y'all were listening, and I think he's still on. Yeah, he's still on. Jermaine, you still on? I didn't know you still.
Jermaine's still here.
Yeah, man. That album is something. I think, like, when we look back, because it was such a moment, because I remember that year, 2014, it was like so much that happened, like in terms of the police brutality, it was like numbing to like take off, because you had like the Mike Brown happen in August, and then it was like so many other things, like Eric Gardner, and then it was right. All that leading up to that, it was just like a rage, and then that album came out, it was like, finally, this is where we can lay our burdens down and just really, like, come to grips to what, like, seriously, just, like, because it just, like, mentally, it was, like, an exhausting time thinking about everything that was happening in terms of, like, how intense everything was, and it was, like, that album, I feel like, is it, like I said, I did a album review, and I said that the way Marvin Gaye's What's Going On spoke to the time, I said, this album is going to be one of those ones when we look back, like, 20 years from now, it's like, okay, I remember where I was when this album was released, and it was like a surprise release. It was like nobody was prepared for it, and it was dropped. I was like, this is like musically, like everything great. And I said on Twitter, I made a thread listing all you that were part of the album saying that this album speaks to like the evolution of what a singer is supposed to do. Like, you know them from their debut, but this is the evolution to how you're right. supposed to evolve, like how you're supposed to grow as a musician. But man, yeah. It's one of my favorite songs. I love the Jimi Hendrix. It's like a Jimi Hendrix meets Beatles meets Funkadelic meets Sly Stone meets. It's like so many. It's so much. Like, because when I heard that song, it made me think of Funkadelic's America Eats Its Young album. Like, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
It was, like, that whole energy of it. That's what I was getting from it. And then it was that Sly Stone kind of thing I was feeling with the two. But, yeah, it's a great album, man. What is it like when you think back now? Like, is it what do you reflect on doing that?
It's it all, man. Just... excuse me, working with some of the best musicians in the world, like, to ever touch the game. Dino Palladino on bass, you got Jesse Johnson on guitar, like Questlove, James Poison, Spanky was on there, Isaiah Sharkey was on there, Chris Dave was on there, you know, it's just crazy, you know, when you think about everything. Just so many elements, you know, just being around all of that, you know, that's one of the best things any artist would want to go into, where everybody is strong in their position. So it's just like you become a part of that. You all become one. It was just probably the best experience I ever had in my life.
Wow. What we're going to do right here, I think we got time enough. We do this segment on the show, Jermaine, it's called 6 Minutes of Rage. It's a political segment. We're going to let our engineer take over. If you're ready, Will, we do the 6 Minutes of Rage.
Okay.
6 Minutes of Rage with Will.
Okay.
I woke up this morning. Hey! Alright, hey folks. Hey, this is the 6 minutes of rage. Hey, Nancy throws the gooseneck a curveball. Oh yeah, we'll come back to that. Hey, guess what? 45, how low can you go? Not only will he mark kids and cripples, but he also marks the dead. Hey, did you hear what he said about Congressman, the largest or longest serving congressman who died earlier this year, Congressman Dingell? Yep, mocking the man and says maybe he's looking up at his wife. Oh my God, how low can he go? You know, he also mocked Senator McCain, you know? And that's supposed to be Lindsey Graham Cracker Graham's friend. I can't believe it. The goose is in a noose. Oh my goodness. Folks, seriously though, human trafficking is at an all-time high. This is a PSA. Young ladies out there, watch out. Hey, our women are being kidnapped daily out here, folks. It is a serious situation. Nobody wants to talk about it. I wonder why. It's because mostly women of color. We've got to address this issue, all right? Oh, New Jersey Democrat switched to Republican. Oh, my God. He's also devoted his loyalty to 45. Oh, I wonder if 45 has since bent over. I don't know. In case you want to know, his name is Jeff Van Drew. Oh, dishwasher, this clown goes on a rally last night, and he's all over the place. If you think that his instability is at an all-time high, no. It's higher. He was talking about dishwashers last night. Unbelievable, in the middle of an impeachment. He said, they're impeaching me. Have you ever seen a crying, whining bastard such as that? Oh, he also opposes a bill to deter Russia sanctions. I wonder why. Speaking of being over a barrel and bent over, I think Putin got him, boy. Oh, no evidence. This is what these whiny Republicans are talking about. Folks, you've got to be insane or downright stupid to see that there's no evidence. You know this guy's into bribery, extortion. Didn't he just pay a $2 million bill about a month or so ago, huh? For cheating his own charity. Wow. The charity that he was supposed to be giving to the veterans, but he ended up buying a portrait of himself. Dude, how can you look at you? I can't believe it. Man, oh boy, this is breaking news. Folks, you will not believe this. You know how we talk about those white evangelicals? Guess what? I think they just broke rank. As a matter of fact, they said that he should be removed. I don't know whether it has anything with that Dingell comment or not. But anyway, hey, there is a breaking news right now. And if you haven't seen it, you want to pull this thing up. I'm going to tell you right now. Christian Today, an influential evangelical magazine, says Trump should be removed. The evangelical magazine founded by, guess what? The late Billy Graham published a surprising editorial by its editor-chief on Thursday calling for Trump's removal. I never thought this day would come. Hallelujah! Okay, the magazine has been critical of Trump, but not outspoken in public. Okay, the piece, which appeared to draw so many readers that the magazine's website briefly crashed. So today, folks, you got to check this out. And this is my 6 minutes of rage. Back to you, Q-Lit and E-B. B, guys, what do you think about that? Did you ever think that the white evangelicals would say anything publicly about this guy, much less a magazine?
Well, I know one thing. I was like, I'm surprised you didn't talk about the impeachment.
Oh!
That's all I
Well, let's get into it. Let's get into it. Well, yep. Well, he has been a peace
for... You talking about that? I was ready. You bring up... Hot Cheeto Puff.
Hey, you know the thing about that?
queen for his life yesterday. That's all he was doing.
Oh,
like,
my God.
I do in a week.
You know, nobody wants to see a whiny man anyway. This guy always whined. And folks, I'm wondering, and those of you who follow this guy, do you want somebody that's always whining and complaining? Poor me. Are you going to let them do it to me? Yep. He was impeached on abuse of power and obstruction of justice. Thank you so much for that, Q-Lan. Because guess what? Nancy, like I said, she threw Goose a curveball, Goose Snake a curveball yesterday, because she's going to hold up the articles of impeachment. She's not going to even send them over. She's not going to send them over until Goose Snake decides to have a fair trial. You know what him and that Graham Cracker, Graham, said earlier this week, that, hey, we're not impartial. Nope, not going to see anything, not going to call any witness. It's going to be over and done. But guess what, Goose? It's not going to happen, because it is held over until January, because guess what? The House is on break for the holidays. And so when they come back, and I thought this was brilliant for her to do that, to hold those articles of impeachment over his head, and Trump is furious. He is furious right now. He said, I want to hurry up and get this over with. But no, dude, it is not over right now. And until you guys agree to a fair trial in the Senate, it's not going to happen. Now, and I think that would also spark that article that came in that Evangelical magazine. I think it's brilliant that she's doing so. Hey, what do you guys think? Q-Lan?
You go ahead, EB. You go ahead, EB. I already knew it was going to happen. I was ready. Go ahead.
I think it's brilliant that she's deciding to hold the articles until they decide to actually have a trial. I mean, there's a lot of people saying that she's playing games again. That's what the Republicans are saying. She's playing games again. It's a wild goose chase. It's gimmicks and games. But no, she should. She should hold them until they decide to do the right thing. I think it's ridiculous to see that party upholding the morals and ideals of one man versus the Constitution and the thoughts and the freedom of the entire country. It's funny to watch. It's tiring as shit, but it's funny.
Well, it's also scary.
It's very scary. It says a lot about where we could be heading, and it's showing a lot of true colors. You're seeing a lot of true colors from a lot of people, and not just the politicians, but from a lot of people. And it's scary, like you said. It says a lot about where we could be heading, and in many ways, where we already are. But that's another discussion.
That's right. And man, I'm telling you, and you talk about this guy, I can't believe that these clowns are talking about Trump is cleaning out the swamp. Are you kidding? He's the biggest swamp rat of all. And you look at it, and look at these cast of characters. You got Pompeo, that punk. You got Barr. You got Gates. Now, I don't know if we talked about it last week or not, or this just came out. Did you know that this clat, I mean, he just embarrassed himself this week. He was on the Senate floor, the House floor, and he said, well, you know what? I don't see how Burisma, now you know that company over in Ukraine, could ask Hunter Biden to clean up their mess when he couldn't clean up his own mess, when Hertz Rental Car found a crack cocaine pipe in the car. And white substance. I don't know if you guys heard that or not. I mean, these guys will go to.
No, we talked about that last week.
Do we talk about it last week?
What's his name? Yeah.
Oh, well, Jim.
Yeah, he brought that up on the House. It's like, dude, don't you got like a whole rap sheet yourself? Why you like, don't call the cocaine the cocaine pipe.
Right.
You got the cocaine pipe lit, so don't talk about his when you got yours lit too.
That's exactly right. He got their billboards all in Florida right now about his drunk driving arrest. Now, I'm telling you right now, you got two guys, one smoking crack and one driving drunk, which is more dangerous? The one driving the damn car. The clown that's smoking the crack cocaine, he's hurting himself. But if you are out there drunk, you're endangering everybody, you know? And this guy even looks, and that Jim Junkyard Dog Jordan. That clown, he's also, there's some skeletons in his closet too, because he's accused of turning a blind eye when he knew about the sexual misconduct on a wrestling team that he was the assistant coach of, right? So he knew about the molestation, but he claimed that he didn't, right? So these guys, I can't understand that. And that Gopher Giuliani, Oh my God. How would you like to have him as a lawyer? So you talking about swamp rats? Hey, these guys, he didn't clean damn swamp. He replenished it. It's unbelievable. But I do believe that Nancy's...
Yeah, it's just all trash all the way around. And it's like, people on the internet is just giving proof point to why we ain't gonna never get nowhere, because y'all don't want to learn shit. It's just people on the internet arguing about what impeachment means, or if they know what it means. It's like, goddamn, how old are we? Like, Google is free out here. Like, I'm not... And what's aggravating to me is people get on the internet talking about that if you know already, then you being elitist to people that don't know. Like, it's like, goddamn, you ain't got no excuse not to know this shit. Like, Google
it's right
is
there.
Free. Like, all you, literally, you can Google impeachment and look up, and it'll give you, like, definition and the whole process of it. Like, why is it my job to educate you on some shit? That's what I'm saying. It's like, it's so simple, and niggas want you to just break shit down to them. That shit is annoying. Like, I'm not no professor, and I'm not no teacher. Like, this is some shit that y'all supposed to be knowing. This is why y'all, and then I see people on the internet talking about, oh, Pence is just as worse. He's been worse. It ain't got nothing to do with that. It's the matter of knowing how politics, the government, the local government works, and understanding that you voting is just as important on that. It's like, it's not even me being scared or all that other shit, like, all that bullshit. It's just as simple as either you're gonna be a problem, you're gonna be a part of solving the problem, or you're gonna be the problem. That's pretty much what it is. Cause all this could be solved, Lindsey Graham, Mitch McConnell, all these people that have seats, and that are making it worse, all y'all gotta do is vote these motherfuckers out and they be out. It's that fucking simple. And that's the frustrating part. That's why I don't halfway want to pay attention to this shit, because this shit is annoying. It's like, it's just people that make it more complicated than what it is. It's that simple. You just vote to get these people out. The seats that they have filled, the reason why the Republicans have the Senate seat is because nobody voted.
That's right.
In their local election. It's that simple. It's that simple. Like, I'm not fixing to keep going, and I don't care if I get called elitist for saying the shit. It's fucking simple. And yes, if you paid attention in civics class, then you would know this. It's not that fucking hard to understand politics. I don't have no elitist bone in my body. I didn't graduate college. I don't have no bachelor's degree. I don't got no master's degree. I got fucking common sense. And that's all the shit. Like, I don't have no college degree to be trying to be elitist. I got fucking common sense. I spent maybe 3.5 years in college. I didn't even spend that much time in college like that for me to be acting like it. It's just fucking common sense. Anybody that has a working brain, it's very simple to understand these politics. It's not that complicated that y'all making it out to be.
Well,
and my energy is more towards the people that's trying to act like they know what the hell's going on. The same people that'll say voting doesn't matter is the same one saying, well, the impeachment don't mean that he's out of office. No fucking shit, Sherlock. Like, everybody knew that. You're not saying nothing that nobody can't Google. That's my issue. Once again, people that act like they know stuff, spreading misinformation, they know a portion of it. And yeah, there is some assholes out there that are trying to make it seem like they're better than somebody because they know more about politics than they do or whatever. Like, there's some political science guru. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people. If you genuinely want to know what it is, okay, that's fine. Because people on Twitter ask it, and I tell them whatever, and we tweet about it, have a good conversation. But I'm talking about the ones that don't even plan on voting having an opinion, like having an opinion on it. It's like, if you feel that way, then shut your assy ass mouth up and don't vote. Like, it's that simple. Like, I mean, because you don't plan on voting anyway. So
that's right.
That's just my thing. I don't care. It's like, at this point, it's like, if she wanted to, Pelosi, she could actually hold on to this. And if he does get reelected, mm-hmm. they can actually bring this shit back up. And if they win the Senate, they can get his ass out anyway. So they can bring this right back up and take his ass out of there and vote.
That's why
play it any way she wants to.
Right, right.
That's what I'm hoping will happen. Even if he does win, she can still get him up out of there. And Pence, he's in the allegations as well. He's in there.
Yep.
He's just in it just as much as Trump. They listed his name multiple times. And during that hearing, when they had people, all the people from the Intelligence Committee, giving their testimony, they implemented him and Giuliani. So, even if they impeach Trump, he can still lose his face too. And guess who's going to be the Fed president? Nancy Pelosi.
That's right.
At least he's doing a great job. So,
well, yep, I want him to go.
Pence is terrible, all that shit. No, his ass going to go down just like Trump is. Like,
that's right.
And he may have a little decency in him and just resign or whatever, but he's implicated in it as well. So while y'all worried about and getting hyped up over Pence or whatever, like, no. Like, he's just implicated just as much as Trump is.
That's right.
Like, and again, all the information ain't even out yet. So Pence, he's just as guilty as he is. So that's my rage on that. Evie, you got any more so we can go to break? Because we got to get a couple more songs in before we close out.
No, we can break.
All right. Okay, we'll go
to
the radio.
And with, it'll be the... What is it? The 14th anniversary of Jamie Foxx's Unpredictable album tomorrow. So I was just playing his songs. This is one of my favorites. He did a Kashif rendition, Love Changes, featuring Mary J. Blige. So we'll be ready. We're going to play that song.
Last couple years I've been going through some changes, good and bad. But you know what? At the end of it, it's still all love, girl. Is just put you through changes. Tell me why. It must be life that's on your mind. You're doing things you wouldn't before.
Oh, so happy.
Love changes. Hey, back to you, Q Lynn and EB, the Soul Savage Show, folks.
Hey, my shit. Jamie Foxx, Unpredictable album. It'd be the 14th anniversary tomorrow. Do you like that album, EB?
I don't remember ever listening to the full album. Outside of like the singles and that song. But I don't remember ever listening to the full. I don't remember ever listening to that full album.
My boy Charlie Burrell on there playing the guitar on most of them songs, like "Can I Take You Home" and "Do What It Do." Man, that what's that one? Day is silly, but love it won't be nothing but good luck. I got one bed. That's my jam. One bed. You remember that? And then what else is on there? Can I take you home? Can I take you home? Get you all alone? Yeah. Do you like?
Like I'm looking at the track list now. I think I remember that DJ play a love song, but I'm looking at the year. I was working at adult AC radio station, so I wasn't listening to a lot that we didn't play at the station. So we were playing like other stuff. We weren't playing that, so I never really got into it. But I will give the album a listen.
Man, this album just takes me back, and I remember we used to play this album all the way through. This is when you could still play an album all the way through, and almost every song on there jam. A three-letter word. That's one of my favorites. That's a musical autobiography. If you listen to it. You know, remember when I was interning at Foxhole and we were talking about this album, I asked him why it's a party going into the bridge. He said, "Some like that, some like the, some do it bougie, some do it hood, I do it hood." And he said, I was like, "What is hood sex?" I was asking him, "What does that mean?" He said that's when you got t-shirt on. That shit had me laughing. He said that's when you still got your clothes on, when you got a t-shirt on and you got socks on. He said he like doing it with socks on. That's why make it hood. I was fucking dying when he said that. But yeah, that and then there's some more songs on it. But yeah, we get to the next one because we go to, I was going to play, was it DJ Play Love Song? Is that the one I got queued up, Will?
Yes.
I forgot.
Yep, here it is.
Oh, yeah, I do know that song.
This is Body Roll music right here, y'all. We'll be back.
I'm here. need to get up with the twister after sipping on Patron. Stroking when I hold them legs up. He can take you out to dinner and look like a player. I'ma give it to you good up in the elevator. He be acting all slow when he get in the draws. I'ma break you off and fuck you up against the wall. Finna move up in the stock cause I'm something me not. And he don't know what he got. I'm in the drop top. To get the twat, I got a knot. No more running from the cops. Now I'm rolling with Fox because the block's hot. But I'm always a G cause I come from the streets. And I got heat for who I was thinking they want some. No more fucking with the lanes. Now you rolling with a thug. So tell a nigga to
beat it, beat it. Won't you play this girl a love song? Please, really, she's the kid that's drinking love song.
Jamie Foxx.
Hey.
DJ, play a love song. All right, back to you, Q Lynn and EB.
I can't control the low waist. The low waist just go out of control when it's on. Come on.
You said the what?
I said can't control your lower region when it's on. Come on. Throw it back a little bit.
EB.
You get a body roll going on.
Oh.
Get a full body roll with that song.
Oh, my goodness. Oh my god!
Listen,
yeah,
that's real. That's my damn. I got everything. Like, hey, throwing it back. We throwing it back before we came twerking.
EB, I heard body roll. That's
everybody
what I heard.
Over 30, y'all know what it is. We doing that during the no limit era.
Oh my goodness!
Oh, radio, y'all.
Oh my god!
I want to give it up to Mr. Jermaine Holmes, singer songwriter that we interviewed at the top of the show. Thank him so much for coming on. Make sure y'all get Stronger Than My Fears. You can get on any, like I said earlier in the show, you get on any digital outlet. And we are out of time, so we gotta go.
Right.
Everybody here. Tune in to next week's show, the final show of 2019, so make sure y'all on time. We have a lot of guests on, so I can't confirm everybody just yet, because it's a whole bunch.
It's gonna be great. It's gonna be great.
We should have a fun show. And we got the best of 2019 shows. I got somebody my producer making all kind of compilations that helps me with the edits on this show. He said he gonna go through all the audio from the top of the year and, you know, the favorite shows throughout the month. He gonna make a compilation. So I just told him make sure he puts the prank on there because that's one of my favorites. So I just told him to put that one in there.
Oh my god.
I don't know what else he gonna put on there.
Right.
That's yeah, right. Thank y'all for tuning in.
Oh my god.
Soul Savage Radio. We're here every Thursday, 4 to 6 PM Pacific Standard Time. My strategy to talk is throw that thing back while y'all listen to Jamie Foxx, this next Jamie Foxx song. Throw that thing
back. That's right. And Q-Lin, also I want to say
in your cars while you go out.
Q-Lin, I just want to thank you also. EB Q-Lin was on last night on Date Night on the Buzz.
Oh, yeah.
It was hilarious. Oh my god.
Come on. He had texted me Monday and I told him I was at a friend's gathering and we got caught up talking and it was like after 1 o'clock by the time we went home and I was like, oh man, I forgot to text him. I was like, I forgot to call into the show, but I was like, I do it Wednesday.
Right.
Like I just stopped on by. That's what the old folks say. They like I just stopped on by for just a second. So y'all had a real fun time and a fun topic. I like listening to
y'all. So EB, the topic was what was it about? You are dating somebody who does not support your business or your career. How long would that last? And Q-Lin came on because she gave another perspective. She says the 5 tips of if you're dating a musician or an artist. What was that? What it was, Q-Lin?
Yeah, it was like dating tips for dating entertainers or something.
Right. It was fun. But anyway, folks, we're out of time. Mr. Melody is here with this show. But this is Jamie Foxx. Do what it do. Thank you so much, folks. This is the Soul Savage Show.
Get y'all body roll going. This body roll music, y'all. Y'all make it do what it do tonight. I just say it. Like in a situation, pop it off. Make it do what it do.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey.
The baby, I don't
just wanna take your freaking clothes off. Kiss your body while I take your freaking clothes off. Leave them heels on while I take your clothes off. Leave them lights on, let me see you go off.
Baby, that's my body calling your name. Ooh-ooh. And baby, that's your body doing the same.
So act right, don't show me. Back it up, now put it on me. Act right, don't show me. Back it up, now put it on me. Now what you wanna do? You wanna get high, you wanna get fired up. What you wanna do? You wanna get sex, you wanna get tied up. Get your rodeo wider. Baby, go lift them thighs up. I think you better wise up, cause I'm about to rise up. What you wanna do? You wanna get high, you wanna get fired up. What you wanna do? You wanna get sex, you wanna get tied up. Get your rodeo wider. Baby, go lift them thighs up. I think you better wise up, cause I'm about to rise up.
Now baby, holla at me, tell me what you're missing. I can put in work in every position from the kitchen table.
You wanna get tied up, get your rodeo wider. Baby, go lift them thighs up. I think you better rise up, cause I'm about to rise up. What you wanna do? You wanna get high, you wanna get fired up. What you wanna do? You wanna get sex, you wanna get tied up. Get your rodeo wider. Baby, go lift them thighs up. I think you better rise up, cause I'm about to rise up.
Your body, your body, your body, your body.
This is Varney, and Varney is a seasoned credit improvement professional and realtor. He's been able to close more leads, 6 times his investment, while doing 50% less work in the last 60 days with a 3-step system that I showed him. Now, this is Quentin, and Quentin was a brand new business, meaning he had no business name, no website, no clients, and he was able to make $10,000